You're listening to the Girl Banker Podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bartholomew. You can count on the Twigs Group to help you develop a modern marketing strategy, bold branding, social media tactics, and great graphic design to promote your bank services and maximize your marketing plans. Visit welovecommunitybanks.com to see how the Twigs Group can help your bank marketing today. All right, today's podcast is a little different because not only do I have one guest, but for the first time, I have two guests and we have figured out Squadcast and we are all here. Very excited to have Eileen Jennings, the Senior Vice President Commercial Banker at Arvest Bank here in Northwest Arkansas, and Lauren Marquette, Executive Director of Susan G. Komen Ozark. Ladies, thank you so much for joining the Girl Banker Podcast today.
Thank you. It's fun to be here. And I'm the old dog learning a new trick with Squadcast.
Well, we're glad that we got you locked and loaded and on here. We're learning, all of us, through all this virtual life anymore. So October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It's hard to believe that we're actually talking about October. This year seems like it's been a decade. So here we are in October and lots of things going on. I thought it was a great opportunity to come full circle and have not only a girl banker that I have looked up to and respected for so long to share her survivor story, but also to bring Lauren in to talk about some facts and things that we should all be aware of as we go into this month of awareness. But Eileen, I don't know if I've ever told you this story. So those of you who have followed me for a while will know that I worked at Arvest for 12 years before moving into a different financial institution before I landed at Grand Savings. But Eileen is just a powerhouse, badass girl banker, incredibly smart, super, super good at her job. I remember being at a training, it feels like a million years ago, in Lowell, where all the training goes down. And it was a commercial banking training. And I remember I must have been out of it or messing on my phone or not paying attention. I got asked a question by the instructor and completely just sat there, blanked. And you came to my rescue and sounded so eloquent and smart. And I was just like, okay, those are my goals, is to be as smart as Eileen at some point in my life. And I don't know if I've reached it. I don't know that I've met it.
Well, that's very sweet, Natalie, but I think you're selling yourself a little short. So,
well, you definitely have set the bar extremely high, and so it's an honor to know you and to follow along with you. So, to get us started today, if you don't mind, to give us a little background on your girl banker story. That's kind of a big thing we do here on this podcast. And then we'll get into your survivor story.
Sure. Well, I never intended to be a banker. I was newly married and living in Kansas City and needed a good old J-O-B. And I answered an interview request for a mortgage-backed securities servicing office. And I had no idea what that was. And I can remember, actually, all the girl bankers will really cringe at this, but during the interview, they were talking about their portfolio of ARM loans and things like that. And I just sort of smiled and nodded. And then I said, I'm sorry, I have to ask, what is an ARM loan? And they just looked at me real coolly. And they were like, adjustable rate mortgage. And I felt really embarrassed, but I got the job. And so I started my banking career actually working on about $67 billion worth of large commercial real estate loans that had been sold off to the secondary market. So I just was on my headset all day, spreading financial statements and rent rolls and talking to people around the country about their properties. And my manager noted how I was able to change my accent depending on who I was talking to and what part of the country they were from. So
now that's a talent.
It really is, I guess. And so worked in that industry for a few years. And then we came back to Northwest Arkansas and again was looking for a job. And I had banked with Arvest or McElroy back in the day and was hired as a commercial credit analyst. So doing similar types of work, but now on the origination side. So I was in that role for a couple of years and then moved behind the lending desk in 2006 in Fayetteville and have just been helping small businesses, large businesses, you know, individuals with commercial lending needs. And now I manage a team doing the same thing. So it's a great way to be connected in the community and get to see a lot of different things.
Well, and you've really established yourself as the small business guru in this area. And I know that as PPP came along, that you were able to just jump right in. But I mean, that was your love language, was helping small businesses.
It has been. And I just couldn't work in a better community because, you know, where you might think that about me as far as the go-to person, there's so many other folks, you know, with lots of different institutions and, you know, with the university. And so I've just been incredibly pleased, and it makes my heart happy to see how many small businesses our banks were able to help in Northwest Arkansas. And, you know, talking to our best bankers, but then, you know, just other bankers with other institutions, you know, it wasn't unheard of for people to work on loan requests for $1,200 or something like that. So
right. I
always want to like yell at the radio when I hear the stories about PPP fraud and it going to all the big guys, because that wasn't the case for our community, and probably the same for a lot of your listeners. Bankers really got out there and worked hard. I never thought I'd have to ask my assistant to come to the office at 2 o'clock in the morning to try and process PPP loans.
Are you feeling that fatigue at this point? I know that that's something I hear from a lot of bankers in general, girl bankers or guy bankers, just kind of sitting and waiting for that legislation to come down the pipe and still trying to communicate with your customer base and reassure them that you're taking care of them. It's been a long summer, so you have to be tired.
Yes. I think talking with some other bankers too, I think it has taken us a while to process the trauma from PPP in that time. Just, you know, we were really trying to help and the rules were changing by the hour and things like that. So I think, you know, we're all still kind of working through that. And then mm-hmm. as you look longer term, you know, we're getting a little nervous about the tools in our toolbox are maybe a little bit more limited.
Sure.
So, you know, we're trying to continue to keep up communication and really try and collaborate with other community partners and groups. There's lots of things going on in different communities as far as business owners working together and collaborating on ideas and, you know, trying to get ideas pushed through at different legislative and municipality levels. So, but yeah, we're tired, and, you know, and then we're in the middle of a pandemic. So you worry about
that too.
Yeah. You worry about the health of your team and your family, and you miss seeing people at events and things like that. So, you know, but it's the same story for everybody. So it's hard to feel too sorry for yourself individually, because everyone's going through the same thing.
Well, and your talents are much broader than just your talents within the bank office, but you're quite the avid fisherwoman, and you've got a black belt in Taekwondo.
That's right. So,
and you're quite the sewer. So talk to us about those hobbies.
Well, like I said, I didn't intend to be a banker. On high school graduation night, they said that I intended to be a missionary and fashion designer, hopefully living in Europe. So I guess I thought that I would proselytize through cutting edge fashion, but when I was 10 years old, I asked for a Malibu Barbie, and my parents bought me a Singer sewing machine. So it's been a few decades now of sewing, and I enjoy it. I think what I've realized, what I enjoy most about the hobby, is that in 95% of the things that I do, both professionally and with my family, it requires a lot of collaboration and teamwork. And with sewing, it's just me. And so if the project doesn't get done, it's because I didn't do it. Or if it does get done, it's because I did it. So it's nice to have a hobby that's very different than what you do professionally. And my fishing is really bad, but I do enjoy it. I do enjoy being out in the water and on the water. And one of the groups that Lauren's group works with, Casting for Recovery, they took me on a fabulous fly fishing trip a few years ago. And so that really helped with the recovery from breast cancer and things like that. So I've just continued it on.
That's great. Well, and that's probably a good segue, Eileen, to talk about your story, and then we can kind of get to Lauren. But talk to us about your breast cancer story.
Sure. It's a long one. I mean, as in regards to the number of years. So I'm one of those families that had strong family history. My maternal grandmother and maternal aunt and my mother all had breast cancer and passed away due to breast cancer. And my mom actually was diagnosed when she was 35. And this was back in the early 90s. She actually went for a mammogram with a coupon, and it could have been a coupon from like either Komen or American Cancer Society. I'm not sure at that time, because health insurance was definitely not covering mammograms for younger women. And she went in and she was diagnosed, and treatment was a lot different then, but she was in remission for a number of years. And then she passed away when she was 43, when I was a senior in college. So I knew very early on that it was something that I needed to pay attention to. So I think I had my first biopsy when I was 21, because I felt a weird lump, and good old Dana Greer and Dr. Greer in Fayetteville saw me. And in my early 20s, I just had to kind of keep advocating for my screening routine, and, had to tell the story to a lot of different doctors in Kansas City, and, was also paying out of pocket for screenings because they weren't being covered. And when we moved back to Fayetteville in 2003, I was really fortunate to, this is when Dr. Harm with the Breast Center had come to Fayetteville with the breast MRI. And we had a family friend who was kind of working with a group of patients. And so she got me in on the test group for the MRI. So I was one of the first women to be imaged using the breast MRI machine in Fayetteville, and just kept up with the screenings. And again, really, there was support, but there wasn't at the time quite as much support for young women. And, the guidelines were changing. So, they would recommend screenings 10 years before your mother was diagnosed. And then it was like, do an MRI here and a mammogram here. And, I really had to push. Like, I knew that I was at risk. Genetic testing at that time was still new, and it also wasn't protected. So I was watching that legislation move through the courts as far as my genetic history, and if I were to get the test, how results would be protected and things like that. So I felt like I was really advocating for myself, but it was frustrating to have to tell the story over and over again of why I was so young and why I was in for tests. And so I did that for the next 10 years with screenings with, the breast center in Northwest Arkansas. And in 2012, my daughter was a few years old, and we weren't going to have any more kids. And in 2012, I think I have this right, that the Supreme Court had ruled about the patient protection for genetic testing. And so I always had my screening MRI in December. And I told my husband in December of 2012, I said, okay, 2013 is going to be the year I'm going to like look into genetic testing, and we'll kind of take the next step. I think Angelina Jolie had gone through a prophylactic mastectomy because of her genetic tests. And I was like, I'm ready to tackle that. And in December of 2012, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So based on what they saw on the MRI, so I was diagnosed with a really early stage ductal carcinoma in situ, and on one side, that's what they found. And I took the genetic test, and I was positive for the BRCA gene. And so they recommended a double mastectomy, and I did that. And I'm glad that I did, because when the pathology came back, I had the DCIS in the one breast, I had DCIS in the other breast, and I had infiltrating ductal carcinoma in the right breast that we had not seen on any tests. So it was more involved than we initially thought, but the surgery went well and my margins were clear and my lymph nodes were clear. And so I just worked through the double mastectomy and reconstruction based on that diagnosis, and then was given a clean bill of health a few months later and had a hysterectomy and salping oophorectomy, which sounds sort of like a Thai dish, but it's not. So my cancer was shown to be estrogen and progesterone receptor positive, so we needed to work on tamping down those good old hormones. So that helped with that. And then I just, you know, was told to try and stay healthy and come back in once a year. And they gave me a reoccurrence rate of about 1%. And so I felt really good about that. I was really proud of myself for staying on top of things. And about 3 years later, I'm not known to be a runner, but I had taken up running and I'd trimmed down a little bit, and I was having some issues under my arm, just this weird sensation. I couldn't quite pinpoint it. And if you've had a mastectomy, you also are kind of numb in certain areas and nerves kind of knit back, so you never quite know what's happening. And I had my husband look, and he said, "No, your skin looks fine. Everything looks, your scars and everything." I said, "There's just something weird." And I was sitting in our hot tub. This is a PSA for how a hot tub can save your life, ladies. So I was sitting in a hot tub with my arms stretched out, and I was just kind of feeling up under one of the scars under my arm, and there was a big knot of something. So I went back in to see my surgical oncologist. And so he did a biopsy, and he did it 45 minutes before a job interview for a promotion. I got worked in on a cancellation, and I said, you know, I really need to get to this interview. You think you can be quick? He said, "Oh yeah, I'm sure we can be quick." And he's like, "Jocelyn, get the new biopsy kit." And I'm like, no, Jocelyn, just get the old one. Get the one you know how to use. Like, we don't need to be trying something new here. But I have all kinds of stories that I think are very funny about my diagnosis. But anyway, it came back positive. So that started the second leg of the journey in regards to more tests and more surgery, and then 7 months of chemotherapy and radiation. So finished all that up at the end of the summer in 2016. And so far, all of my scans have been clean. So I'm just been almost, you know, 4 years of just learning what my new normal is and trying to be as healthy as I can be after the effects of so many surgeries and chemo and radiation. But I've been extremely lucky, and I've been able to do different things. You know, I started Taekwondo when I was 40, and that was really good training and just learning new things about my body and how to help it. And so I'm just enjoying being a basically 75-year-old lady in a 42-year-old body. So, you know, but it's good. And I share my story with lots of people. I have shown my boobs to lots of people. but, you know, I had ladies that showed me their boobs like before their mastectomy, after their mastectomies and things like that. So it's a really great community in Northwest Arkansas. And I'm sure, you know, you could say that about many areas around the nation where survivors are really helping each other out and being there for each other. And really, because of organizations like Komen and, you know, different groups in the community, you know, trying to support and facilitate that kind of support. So I just am very thankful to be where I am and be able to share the story and just help out when I can, where I can, with women, and just helping women stay healthy and get through this and be healthy on the other side. And unfortunately, my sister, who lives in Colorado, was diagnosed in May. So she's,
oh wow,
y'all just think about her. She's right in the middle of it. Two more Taxol treatments before she gets a little break and heads into surgery at the end of the year. So, and she tested positive for the gene. So, you know, our family has just really had to be very diligent and, you know, really push to stay in front of doctors and make sure that we're staying on top of things. So,
well, Eileen, that is, I mean, you're such an inspiration, as I mentioned earlier, in regards to your girl banker story. But this story, I mean, you just, so many different levels to this story. You had to advocate for yourself from day one. I mean, since it was, you were so young at that time. And how many years has this been? 8?
So I would have started, I mean, I would have started having some screenings back in like 99, 2000. And, you know, and the doctors, things have just gotten so much better in regards to how doctors talk with folks. I mean, I can remember a female radiologist when the genetic testing, you know, was really, people were really starting to talk about it. And I was going in to have an MRI to get kind of like an all clear so I could try and get pregnant. And she said, "Have you thought about genetic testing?" I said, "Yes. Like, you guys talk to me about it. You know, I've been watching it. I'm just, you know, I'm just not ready yet and I'm not comfortable. It doesn't mean I'm ruling it out." And she said, "You really need to think about it." And here she's sitting there in the room. I can remember it, you know, it's very dark and she's, you know, evidently very pregnant. And I said, "Okay, well, what if I were to have it and I was positive, you know, what would you recommend?" She's like, "Well, definitely, you know, like go ahead and like have your ovaries removed and all this." And I'm thinking, so
wow.
You could have read the chart. Like, I'm here because I would like to get it. So things have gotten so much better, but how professionals talk with patients about their options and, you know, just the different screenings and treatment options and things like that. And that's, I really try and, I'm not a medical professional at all, but when women call me with a new diagnosis, you know, depending, and most of the women, especially the younger women, it's, you know, it's a early stage cancer. You know, I said, "Look, you've got lots of time. Like, just, I know you want to take care of this as soon as you can, but just take a minute to breathe and like just take a little bit of time to get some more information and really talk, have a conversation with your, you know, your medical providers about the different options." And I can hear that those conversations are happening more and more, but there was a lot of advocacy and pushing at the beginning. And then, you know, doctors have a lot on their plate and they treat every new patient as the average patient because that's what they're trained to do. And you have to make yourself above average to get the kind of care and attention that you need.
And I think that might surprise, I mean, I'm surprised by that. That might surprise some of our listeners because, you know, I feel like, and Lauren, you can specifically talk about this, that Susan G. Komen has brought so much awareness to this disease. I think it's surprising to me the amount of advocacy you still had to do for yourself. So that might be a good transition over to you, Lauren. Talk to us about what you do with the local affiliate and we'll go from there.
Yeah. So Eileen's story is, I just, you know, there's so many times I was agreeing and nodding my head because, you know, the really big thing that we say all the time is like, you are your own best advocate. And that is extremely important. And if you're not getting the answers that you know, want or think that you need, then go get another second, third opinion, you know, and that's, and if a doctor makes you feel bad about it, then you don't need to be going to that doctor anyway. So yeah, Komen has really fought to make sure that, you know, even through, you know, Eileen had probably a great support system and she knew her family background and had that going into different appointments, but you know, some women aren't as lucky and don't have a support system. And so that's where Komen comes in. And whether it's, you know, connecting survivors with those who are, you know, getting a diagnosis or have a scare, or it's more specifically with breast health navigators who are nurses or trained lay people who go with women to their appointments to make sure that, you know, hearing you've got cancer is is scary. And so, mm-hmm. you know, what are the follow-up questions and, you know, writing down things the doctors are saying, because, you know, I'm sure Eileen can attest, it's when you hear news like that, it's a lot of times you just kind of shut down. So that's what really common is. And also it's so interesting. So our founder, and she always yells at me when I tell her this, in our local organization, her name is Gay Seipert, and she's an incredible woman. And she said, when she got diagnosed with breast cancer over 30 years ago, that she started talking in her circle of friends, and her friends were shushing her because she was saying the word breast out loud in mixed company, you know? And so she was like, yeah. And so she was like, we've got to talk about this, like out in public and talk to our friends about it. And so she actually went down to Dallas and went to a Komen event there, because that's where our headquarters are located, and said, I want to bring this back to Northwest Arkansas. And a lot of the affiliates that you see across the country, they have similar stories of women who started this. And that's the great thing about Komen, is it's a very grassroots organization of women who went through a diagnosis and said, I don't want this to happen to other women. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we start. And, you know, advocacy is at the core of everything that we do.
So tell us about, I want some takeaways for our listeners today. Some of them are probably listening to this and they're nodding their head like you were, Lauren, in agreeance with Eileen. You know, I would say the likelihood is that the majority of the people listening have been affected in some form or fashion. You know, I personally, and we'll talk about Big Wig in a moment, but my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, I lost her when I was 13. She had an 11-year battle, was diagnosed in 84, back in a time when it really was taboo. And maybe taboo is not the right word, but it certainly wasn't discussed. She knew she had a lump and did nothing about it. Mm-hmm. Didn't tell anybody about it. It wasn't talked about. It wasn't, there was no advocacy at that time, but you know, she underwent a double mastectomy as well, and lost her battle in 1995. And my paternal grandmother also had it much later in life and had a mastectomy as well. So many people are going to be like, I've been affected, either they themselves, a family member, a good friend. So many people know or are touched by this disease. So, but I do think too that there's an element, especially right now, where we could be distracted and it's mm-hmm. not top of mind to do self-exams yeah. or to be thinking about prevention themselves or early detection. So, you know, it might be kind of a wake-up call of like, oh, this could happen to me. This yeah. could happen to my mom. This could happen to my sister. This could happen to my coworker. What are some takeaways from today's podcast where they can do something immediately?
One thing that I say all the time is, it's not if, it's when you're going to know someone or affected, whether it's yourself or a friend or a family member with breast cancer. So we know it's still, the statistics are still 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime. But one of the really big things that we're pushing right now is, at the beginning of COVID, the guidelines were that you should be putting off your screening mammograms until the fall. And that was a real worry. That was due to a real worry of how our healthcare system would be overloaded, because we just didn't know what COVID was going to do, you know? And so now it's all of our, at least in our area, and I know other areas, their breast centers and breast screening and imaging have really adjusted and have added hours, have added weekend hours and things like that to accommodate. So they want you in. And so if you're one of those who have put off your screening mammogram from the spring, you've got to, as soon as you hear this podcast, go reschedule your screening mammogram and make sure that, you know, you don't put it off for an entire year, because that's one of the things we're really, really worried about. I mean, early detection is key in getting all of that very specific treatments that are coming down the pipe of being more, you know, tailored to what your body is seeing and that you have. And so the key to that is getting it diagnosed early, so you have a lot more options. And mm-hmm. so that's really the big takeaway that we've been talking about lately. There are a lot of times women, if they had some issues where it wasn't just your regular, you know, yearly screening, they were still going in and getting checked. But if you didn't get checked, if you put it off for any reason, you know, now's the time to go and schedule. Yeah. You know, it's really all of the, you know, healthcare system has really adjusted to COVID. They've really taken a lot of precautions. So, you know, don't be scared about it. They know and they're taking precautions, and we want you in and getting, you know, your screening.
Yeah, I agree with that. And mm-hmm. I would just say outside of COVID and the challenges that has created, if you are younger or you have not had a screening yet, or you've not visited with anyone, I think the best place to start is to have a clinical breast exam by your gynecologist or OBGYN, and then set up a risk assessment meeting with their office. And if, you know, if they don't have someone, they'll refer you to someone. And, you know, that's just a conversation about family history and lifestyle and different things like that. And that's just the first step in customizing your care plan, you know, that's for you, not just the average patient. You know, like Lauren was saying, listening to them, but then also if something doesn't feel right, you know, get a second opinion. But mm-hmm. some women are going to go through it, and even with a strong family history, they may just be at a normal risk grade. Did you hear that, Natalie? That was like a banking reference.
Well played.
Yeah, a normal risk grade because of different elements. So knowledge is power, and it's really easy to put off and just tamp down. But like Lauren was saying, you know, get in early, you know, make a plan. If that involves the screenings, do the screenings. And then, you know, if you are dealt some bad news, you know, you probably have a lot more options because you got in there early and mm-hmm. dealt with it.
Yeah. And to piggyback too on what Eileen's saying is that she caught the second time that there was a lump. And so it is important to not just, you know, feel around and see, but it's really important to just look at your breasts. And because a lot of times if there's a change in size, if there's something, you know, going on with your, like if there's peeling or dimpling, or it's good for you to know you're normal. So then if something's going on, that you go and see someone. And one of the things that I do a lot in my line of work is when a woman said that she's a breast cancer survivor, I often ask her, well, how did you catch it? And it's so interesting to me there's been, you know, a number of women that I've talked to who saw something. They didn't feel anything, and they saw something, and they went in for a check, and you know, a few of them had been put off by the doctor because they didn't initially see something, but when they did some more diagnostic testing, they saw something else. So they were their own advocates and kept with it. And so if there's something that's not normal for your breasts that's going on, you know, be your own advocate and get that second and third, you know, because only you know your body that well.
Yeah. So Lauren, give me some advice. Eileen, you chip in as well. If there's a listener like me who had a clear exam or a clear mammogram, I've received my first mammogram, I think it was last year. This is the bad part. And I think a lot of people are going to be like me. They're like, I think I got one. Was it last year? Was it the year before? My mom had a scare. My mom's had a ton of different scares through her life. She started getting mammograms at the age of 25 because of what my grandmother went through. But because of that, I thought, you know, I need to go get a good baseline. So here I am, 38. I want to think it was when I was either 36 or 37. It was clear. I go to my OBGYN on an annual basis as scheduled. And they, of course, do that exam there. I have a friend, her name is Leslie Harper, who is a survivor as well. And she was like 1 or 2 months out of her OBGYN exam. And they did an exam at that time too. And she was diagnosed within a couple of months. So here she was, not far out of a mammogram, not far off from her OBGYN visit, and still it was detected. It happened that quick. And because mm-hmm. she did self-exam, she caught it so quickly. I'm terrible about doing self-exams. So obviously my takeaway today is to be much more aware. But when should I go back? I'm learning I need to advocate for myself from this mm-hmm. whole conversation. So not wait on a doctor to reach out to me to reschedule or to do that. So what should I do next, knowing this kind of vague information I gave you about my last clear mammogram?
Yeah, well, I think it's really important to know that the average age of getting diagnosed with breast cancer is still 61. Even though we hear a lot more younger and younger stories. But we know that if you're diagnosed at a younger age, that oftentimes it's a more aggressive breast cancer. And so that's why it's so important, especially, you know, if you are in your 30s, in your 40s, 20s even, that you know you're normal. And so probably Leslie, I actually know Leslie too, but probably Leslie, you know, yeah, found something or saw something. Yes. And so
she is a force to be reckoned with.
She is. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, it's really important to be like, again, be your own advocate. And I think Eileen could probably talk about, you know, as far as talking to your doctor about having those conversations about when you should come back in and things like that.
Yeah. And I think getting that initial risk assessment. So, you know, make the investment of time and, you know, it may, and possibly money to sit down with the risk counselor and go through the history and make sure that they fully understand your family history, but as well as like your personal history and lifestyle. And then also take that time to understand the different tools available for you to stay on top of your health. So, you know, for women that have really dense breast tissues, you know, maybe the mammogram is not the right test. You know, maybe it's a, you know, robotic guided ultrasound. There's just a lot more tools now based on women's individual needs. And you're not going to know that until you have that initial assessment and conversation with your doctor. More information is more power. And I, you know, I've been learning more things in regards to the genetic tests and what that information means. And, you know, it's just, I learn something new every time, you know, I go in for an appointment, but I also go in with a list of questions and concerns. And I make sure that I don't leave until those have been addressed. Yeah. If I had to wait till I was in the office to come up with those questions, they wouldn't happen. So I just, you know, I just keep a little notebook or a little note on my phone. And, you know, when the doctor says, you got any more questions? I'm like, well, let me check my notes. I probably do.
Yeah.
But it's,
that's,
you know,
such good advice.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and, you know, and especially as a survivor, I have to be careful not to compare my situation with others. You know, it really is about making it into, you know, customized for you. And so I could have had one diagnosis and this course of treatment, but that's not going to be the same for everybody. Really, if anything, just use my story as one to, you know, just get in there, see the doctor, get that initial screening or conversation, and then just make a plan, you know, for you.
Yeah. And I do want to add to Natalie is, you know, Eileen's talked about having your money and your cash ready and things. And so that's something that Komen does help with. You know, probably a lot of the women listening, you know, do have insurance. But one of the things is with the ACA, now screening mammograms are covered as an essential health benefit. Didn't used to be in the past. Most insurance companies do cover the genetic screening that Eileen was talking about and then won't kick you off your insurance if you do test positive. So that's kind of what, you know, she was talking about too, about worry about that. But a lot of times women don't know is that the diagnostic tests are not necessarily covered by your insurance. So you will be paying out of pocket until you meet that deductible. And so that's an area that Komen does work on with policy. We actually had a virtual summit recently with our senators and congressmen to talk and get them to co-sign, and congresswomen, excuse me, and to co-sign what's called the ABCD policy. It's access to breast cancer diagnosis. We're working on this in different states. A few states have already passed this legislation, but it's making sure that our insurance companies are covering, you know, if you have to have a diagnostic mammogram or a breast MRI or a breast ultrasound, that's actually being covered by your insurance. Because if you have an issue, you might be going in every, you know, 6 months, every 9 months, and that's going to be out of pocket until you, you know, hit that deductible. And so we want to make sure that women aren't making that choice of, you know, putting food on the table or hitting this deductible to make sure that they have the best care. So, Yeah. So it's still, you know, there's still a lot in public policy that we're working on because of that. But just know that if you're having trouble meeting your deductible, whether you have insurance or not, there are places that can help, and or you can get on a payment plan or something like that. So please don't put off, you know, your subsequent diagnostic testing because of that.
Well, ladies, there's been so many good takeaways for me personally. I'm sitting here honestly very surprised at the level of self-advocacy that it takes, and so thankful for organizations like Susan G. Komen to help with that and to provide that assistance along the way as well. Not to mention the community of support. I know, Eileen, you've talked about that a lot as well. So as we kind of wrap up, one thing I do want to mention is the Big Wig campaign. So Lauren, talk to us about that.
Yeah. So this is one of my favorite things that we do because we get some local celebrities to don these crazy pink wigs. And if you haven't seen the picture of Natalie, you do. Especially, I think my favorite is you masked up because it looks like you have a secret. But we get our
look. I look almost unrecognizable.
It's great. And so what they're doing with this is bringing awareness to breast cancer and making that part of the conversation in their different communities, but then also raising funds to help women with things like, you know, screening and diagnostic testing, with policy issues, with research is a big part of what we do is, you know, making sure that we know we have the most cutting edge research available. So that's kind of the Big Wigs. And so each Big Wig goes out into their communities and raises funds for that. And we're so excited to have Natalie as one of our Big Wigs. She's actually leading right now, but I'm sure she has a pitch for you all.
I'm extremely competitive. I can't help it. And I know, and especially in Northwest Arkansas, I mean, we're so blessed. We've got great organizations and great corporate groups that really funnel a lot of funds into the nonprofits in our area. So I'm sure I don't want to go ahead and accept defeat, but I have a feeling that I'll get bypassed at some point. I think I've been at the top of the leaderboard for the last 2 weeks, not that I'm counting. But I do, I just checked, I've been checking it like a crazy person to see where I am with my goal. So I have a $5,000 goal. I would love to blow the top off of that. And really a lot of my push for the campaign in terms of donations has been very grassroots through social media. I've had some of you already donate and I'm so grateful for that and so thankful for that support. A lot of friends and family have been chipping in. I'm at 67% of that goal so far. Would love to pass that by. You can access my direct donation link on my Instagram. I've posted it on my Facebook a couple of times, but if you go to the link in my bio at The Girl Banker on my Instagram, you can donate directly there. Don't donate through the Facebook link. Poor Lauren, that's her loving heart. That's what we say here in the South. She's had to put up with my high maintenance requests. I accidentally somehow allowed Facebook to put a donate link there and everyone started using it. And then her and her team have had to manually move these donations from the corporate level over to the Big Wig campaign. So use the link in my bio so that Lauren doesn't have to put up with me that much. But we would be forever grateful. If you feel inclined to donate, know that it's going to good use. And ladies, I'm so thankful that you guys spent some time this morning. I know you both have things to go do. You're both very busy. And Eileen, I'm just so inspired by your story, your Girl Banker story, your survivor story. You continued to work through all of this. And like I said earlier, you're just one badass girl banker. And Lauren, I'm so thankful to know you and be connected with you and thankful for the work that you're doing. So thank you both so much for joining us today. And if anyone wants to connect with you with questions, do you guys mind to share the appropriate channels that people could do that?
Sure. This is Eileen. And you can just email me if you'd like. It's EileenBJennings@gmail.com. And I'm happy to visit with people. I'm also on a number of social media channels. So I'm always willing to chat with folks. And Natalie, I just appreciate you so much for having a venue for these stories and really advocating for the women in your circle as well as your community.
Thank you.
Absolutely. If you would like more information about what Komen does in your area, you can always go to just the Susan G. Komen page. If you are in Northwest Arkansas, you can go to KomenOzark.org. And so just learning about what we're doing and projects we have, but the Susan G. Komen overall website has a lot of really good resources. You can even download questions to take with you to the doctor. So as Eileen was talking about, like having questions and things like that, there's a, you know, starting point for you to really think through what you want to ask the doctor. So there's a lot of good resources there. There's even a place where you can set a reminder to go get your mammograms and it will text or email you. So that's a great place, Natalie, to make sure that you're going each year or however long the doctor tells you that you need to come in. So, you know, please go to our website and take advantage of those resources we have for you.
Fantastic. Well, ladies, thank you so much. And I appreciate everything. Remember, if you want to donate, if you feel inclined to donate to my Big Wig campaign, my link is in my bio. I'll have some more information on a quick ad after this episode. Thank you guys so much. I lost my grandmother to breast cancer in 1995 after she fought an 11-year battle and underwent a double mastectomy. I'm honored to be one of 8 Komen Ozark Big Wigs and to serve in her honor this year, and I have a goal to raise $5,000. Help me reach my goal and help advance research and advocacy for breast cancer awareness by donating via my link and my Instagram at The Girl Banker. Be sure to subscribe to the Girl Banker podcast so that you don't miss an episode, and follow me on Instagram at The Girl Banker. The views and opinions expressed in the Girl Banker podcast are those of the individual participants and do not reflect the official policy or position of any financial institution or agency. It is produced by Natalie Bartholomew and Bobby Hudspeth.